You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Doctor, if I really, really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the roar, and I'd like to give you information, asking for no blood, blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome to hour number two, and you are indeed listening to the Common Sense Show, where we're freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And wow, I'm still catching my breath, and I got to tell you, some of the stories that I was hearing from Cody in the break were just as interesting and fascinating as the ones that he was telling in the last segment. Anyway, Cody is with us for another hour here, and I'll tell you, it's not going to be enough, and we'll negotiate a return, trust me. I want to thank our sponsors again, and Steve Quayle, Renaissance Precious, soon to be worthless cash, into gold. 406-586-4842. Again, the number to call Steve at is 406-586-4842. And then Ted Brower, who's keeping me on my feet, you'll want to go to healthmasters.com and use that coupon code for our listening audience, 5Hodges, to take 5% off. And then, of course, Numana. And with all the trouble that's coming, and we're going to really get into more of a current events perspective in the third hour with Bob Griswold. Listen, if you don't have food, or you don't have enough food, Numana's your bet. They're better than all the competitors. They won the comparison test. The pricing is great. The quality is restaurant quality. No glyphosate, no GMOs. You know, it's incredible. Check them out. Go to the website at numana.com/Hodges, and then take 5% off with the coupon code Hodges9. And those are the people who are taking care of us again for this hour. We really appreciate them. And you're going to be hearing from one of our other sponsors in the third hour, and we'll tell you all about Ready Made then. But, wow, I'm still catching my breath. Cody Snodgrass is our guest, and I am concerned about his safety. Cody, I went out during the break, and I want to share this with everybody. And, you know, my wife is... The quick story of how I got into this. I was a happy college basketball coach, and teaching my psychology classes, and life was blissful until McCain came along and tried to steal my property and wreck me and that of my neighbors. And then I really woke up to all that was going on. I knew a little bit from having a naval intelligence father, but I didn't know what I know now. And I've had some fascinating interviews through the years, and she's kind of gone through a metamorphosis with me. When I start getting into this, she thought I was a nutcase beyond just a conspiracy to steal our land, and now she's kind of caught up to me. And so now we can have these really good conversations. And I went out during the break and I said, I'm in the middle of one of the most fascinating interviews I've ever done. And I've interviewed some great, great, great people, very interesting, intelligent people. But this is as good as it gets. And I told her that. And here's the question she asked me, because I mentioned a couple of things that you've already mentioned. She said, why is he still breathing? How would you answer that question?
I'd answer that question because I have a high degree of operational integrity. There's a lot of people, I save their lives, they repay the favor. I'm highly, highly intelligent. I'm psychic. I'm part Indian. And the CIA did genealogy studies, and they found the highest incidence of natural psychism per race was a mix of Caucasian and Cherokee. I can feel things and know things, and I'm highly trained. I'm that's why I'm still alive. And I also have help, spiritual help. And so when I died in the hospital in Project Slammer, which is another fascinating story, I I do have angelic help. I met my guardian angel when I died in the hospital, and I was floating over myself, watching the doctors cut my clothes off, and I was in convulsions, and I was defecating and puking at the same time, and I actually did die, and I crossed over to that world, and I'm still alive now because I do have help spiritually, and we can talk about all that later. It's kind of an esoteric thing, but I'm a firm believer in angels. I had a friend, one of my best friends, and he was in Vietnam, and on his second tour, he got stitched with an AK. He took three rounds, did 18 months at Fitzsimmons VA hospital, but before that, the VC threw a satchel charge up at him, and he heard a voice, a woman's voice in his head, said, get down now, and he felt like hands pushing him down. And then the rest, most of his platoon died, but he didn't. And he told me, he said, Cody, that was my guardian angel. This stuff's real. That saved my life in Vietnam, but I didn't want to talk to my CO and all of them about it. They think you're crazy, you know. But now he's a priest in the Mormon church, and he's a high priest. And so there are spiritual things that work, and those forces, if you can marshal them, they can help protect you. And I'm still breathing from a variety of reasons.
Well, that's a great answer. I want to go back to something you were talking about when we unfortunately had to break when we did. Bad timing, but let's go back and try to pick this up. I'm going to try to remember as closely as I can to the exact verbiage you used. I stood where Lee Oswald stood, and I was in Dallas on November 22nd. Can you pick that up from there?
I certainly can. I'd like to also say thank you to all the people out there and connect with you all, whoever's listening. We send you our love, and we hope that we have the strength to get the truth out here tonight, thanks to Dave and his platform. So now, back at those times, in November 22nd of 1963, I was a second grader at Janie Stark Elementary School in Farmers Ranch, Texas. And so you fast forward to 1973, I was a junior at R.L. Turner High School, and we took a field trip. And the field trip was to the Texas Book Depository in Dallas. And so we went up to the top floor, and they had at that time made a little museum thing, and they had these satin ropes, you know, and there was this real old man who was the security guard. And the class looked around, they all left, and I had started shooting guns in 1963. I'd been shooting for a long time, and by that time I'd already been shooting 10 years. And so I talked to the old man, and I told him that my stepdad was at Pearl Harbor and Guadalcanal in November 42 and the whole story. And I said, could I please cross the line and stand where Lee Harvey Oswald stood? And he said, come on, boy, you know, because he'd been in World War II as well. And so me and this old man stood there, and they had a little red square painted at the window there. And I looked out, and I looked up Elm Street, Main Street, and then there was a big, big Texas live oak tree. And I told that guard, I said, well, if I was going to shoot somebody, it'd be straight ahead, you know, right out the window. And he said, I know, me too. And I said, there's no way you can even see the road. Now, this is 10 years after the assassination. That tree had evidently grown a little bit, but I couldn't even see the cars when they were driving. I barely even see them through that tree. And those Texas live oaks, you know, they have a circle of I don't know, 50 feet maybe of the branches and leaves, and there's no way you could make a shot through that to hit Kennedy. Sure. On top of that, he had a Mannlicher Carcano, and he cut the barrel off. He ordered that thing from American Rifleman, you know, for 1995 or whatever, and he'd actually cut the barrel off. And a lot of people who don't know about guns, every military gun, even civilian guns, have an 11-degree crown on the end of the barrel, and they put those on there. It's a little indention on the barrel. It's a gas dynamical property where the bullet comes out and it destabilizes it in flight if you have a flat barrel. So they put those crowns on there to help with the gas stuff and keep the bullet, you know, flying and spinning straight. And so there's no way that he could have made that shot. And after that is when I really started thinking about things. And that old man told me, he says, you know, I shot a lot of things in World War II. And he said, there's no way anyone could make that shot. He said, but this is my job, and they don't want us talking about it. So, anyway, I know that was a false flag op, and you're absolutely right. Oswald was the patsy and the cover for what really happened to Kennedy, just like McVeigh was the cover for what really happened in the Murray Building. And this goes to 9/11. It goes, I mean, the parallels, once you study these things, Dave, are just simply amazing.
Yeah, they They you know, I said one time in just kind of a moment of whatever, people said, "How do you know this, Dave?" And I don't even remember what the subject was. I said, "Because I have their damn playbook." And I do. They keep repeating themselves over and over again. I'll give you another example. The Las Vegas shooting. They had the Patsy again, and they had the parallel assassins. I mean, it was the exact same pattern, and they just keep doing it over and over. It's always a lone nut assassin. Sometimes they leave behind written documentation that's been forged saying this is why they did what they did. It's absolutely predictable. You always know it's going to be the lone nut, don't you?
Yeah, that's exactly right, and that's why it's very important on shows like yours to get this truth out, expose these patterns, expose these things that are covered up and hidden by this pile of lies from the shadow government, because there is a secret shadow government that's taken over our country. I know I used to work for them, and I've seen what they've done. I was greedy for money. You know, I was making $20,000 a month base pay. Some months we'd make a lot more. We always got paid in cash, and we made $50 a month over there in Saudi. And so this thing is real. It stretches through the pharmaceutical industry, the heroin over there in Afghanistan, you know, the drug, the arms trade. It's like a big octopus. And what we're trying to do is wake people up to the truth so that we can save our country from this shadow government and this big octopus. Because if we don't stand up now, Dave, and we don't get back to our spiritual roots, we will lose this country, and our children will be microchipped and end up God knows where. And so for me, this is my time to stand up spiritually. And we have so much stuff after 20 years to talk about. So any questions, let's go, and whatever you want to talk about, let's do it.
Yeah, you touched on this ever so slightly, and I'd like to go back and expose the motive for the Oklahoma City bombing and what they were actually trying to destroy inside that building.
Okay, this is a great question, and this is the real deal here. We have to go back for a little bit of history, Dave, back to 1980. In the 80s, Saddam Hussein was in fact a paid asset for the CIA.
Yes,
and the Ba'ath Party. And so what happened was they got in a war with Iran. And Iran was a bigger country, and they had approximately a 10-to-1 infantry advantage over the Iraqis. And so we were supporting Saddam, and we covertly armed him. And Donald Rumsfeld back then, I think he was Secretary of Defense, he went to Baghdad and met Saddam. They were providing satellite intelligence and so forth. There were two primary ways we armed him. One was the AIM strain of anthrax from Fort Detrick, Maryland. It was a weaponized grade of anthrax with a smaller spore size and an altered protein coat, which made it more readily available and absorbed in the human body, weaponized. And then the other thing was the Hawkeye 123 cluster bomb, which were the most efficient aerial-to-ground, destructive device. So the CIA went down to Argentina, and they copied our patents, and they had a front guy down there. And he started making these things to covertly arm Saddam. They moved them through Africa after they were produced. But the problem they had was the zirconium. It's an element necessary in the casing for these things to make them more efficient. And that zirconium was primarily produced in the U.S. and Russia and a few other countries. So they had to fake the agricultural reports and stuff to get this stuff down there. And so they armed him with those two things. And so when the war was over with Iran, they never had to use the anthrax or anything. That was just a backup in case they got overrun. And the war was over. Saddam invaded Kuwait later. And that really pissed the Saudis off, and it scared them because they thought they might be next. And they put pressure on our government to do something about it. So they cooked up Desert Storm 1, which was in January of 91. And they had a problem. They had a big problem, Dave. They had covertly and secretly armed Saddam Hussein with a very virulent strain of anthrax, which the American people didn't know about. And so they were fixing to send our soldiers over there, and our standard vaccination program of these for anthrax was a six-month program, one shot per month, to gradually build immunity to this very virulent toxic strain. And we didn't have time. So they did a crash course, and they made the vaccine down to 1 month, and it was all experimental. and they use an adjunct in the vaccine. It was called squalene.
Squalene is
like shark oil. It's a long string molecular fatty acid, and it stimulates autoimmune response, therefore making the vaccine readily adhere in the human body. And so it's very similar to the Thimerosal, the mercury-based flu vaccines and aluminum adjuncts that they've been using in the civilian flu shot. And BioPort was one of the companies. In the book, I have lot numbers, dates, times. The first lots were given to the pilots at Air Force Dover Air Force Base, and then gradually all our guys were given this stuff. So they got over to Iraq in theater, and they started developing all these weird autoimmune things. They passed a secret executive order to bypass FDA testing. And so Dave, our soldiers were being guinea pigs. This is very similar to what happened with the Agent Orange, you know, with the Vietnam guys. And all our guys were getting this junk put in them and going over there, and they started getting sick. Well, later they called it Gulf War Syndrome. But the second part of this, the reason why they bombed the Murrah Building, we're getting there. You just got to go through this history to understand how big and deep this shadow government stuff is. Because defense contractors, everybody's involved in this stuff. So after they all got their anthrax injections, then the Gulf War was the first war where the U.S. deployed on a large scale depleted uranium weapons, uranium-238. They were primarily deployed in two formats. One was the A-10 Warthog with the 30-millimeter chain guns. They're called the tank buster jets. And the other thing was the M1A1 Abrams tanks that fired the Sabot rounds, like the tank that McVeigh and Nichols were in. And so these Sabot rounds are approximately 8 to 9 inches of core of depleted uranium. And when they come out of the barrel at a very high velocity, approximately 5,200 feet per second, and these things have such high kinetic energy when they hit a Soviet T-54 tank, which is the primary tank that Saddam was using, their turrets weigh about 11 tons, and these rounds would hit them and blow them up, you know, and spin them like tops up in the air, and they'd make these big fireballs. And what happened, the Pentagon didn't know this, because it was the first time they used a lot of this stuff, and these fireballs were actually creating new compounds, new molecules, like uranium oxide, uranium dioxide. The particulate size of this stuff, Dave, was about 4 microns. And so our mop gear for our troops, okay, the gas mask only went down to 10 microns. So the problem started when they started breathing this stuff. And this stuff got into the radiation, low-level radiation, accumulates in the thyroid and the reproductive glands, testicles for a man and ovaries for a woman. And so what was happening, our guys were breathing this stuff and didn't know it. So it was accumulating in their bodies. So after the war, they left theater and they come back to the U.S. And so they're making love to their wives or whatever. And this, in their semen, it was being transferred. There was low-level radiation being transferred and toxins being transferred into the ovaries of their spouses, and then from the spouses to the children, and then from the children to the grandchildren. And the Pentagon had this huge problem on their hands, similar to the Agent Orange things with the Vietnam vets, that there would be long-term defects, deformities, all kinds of medical things. And they didn't know how many generations this stuff would go, because Dave, this depleted uranium has a half-life of like 4.5 million years. And so this huge problem started showing up. All our guys were sick. They were sick from the anthrax shots and the autoimmune adjuncts that were used, and also the depleted uranium. And so they were all coming back to the VA. They were showing up with all these weird symptoms. They dubbed it Gulf War Syndrome. So you fast forward to 1994, see, this 1 year before the Murrah Building went up. 1994, Chris Shays, he's a Republican from Connecticut. He's sitting on the Armed Services Committee, and they were determined medical culpability for all these sick veterans. And so he ordered FBI to gather all the records. And there was approximately 480,000 of our troops in the 28-nation coalition that was over there. And all our guys had been at VA hospitals. Some of them were civilians. The FBI was tasked with gathering all these records. And these records were all stored at the Alfred P. Murrah Building. So people go, have you seen the records? How do you know this? Well, Later on September 19th of 1996, during congressional hearings on Gulf War Syndrome, I have a copy of this in a book in the appendix. The DOD, Defense Department, admitted at those hearings, it was all recorded, that over 400,000 Gulf War Syndrome medical records had, quote, disappeared. So this let the Pentagon off the hook for hundreds and hundreds of billions, maybe trillions of dollars of long-term intergenerational medical problems. They didn't know how many generations this uranium stuff was going to be passed down. So when the Murrah Building went up, this stuff went away. And the second reason for the Murrah Building being bombed is, of course, we haven't talked about this yet, but it's during Operation Centaur Rose over in Arkansas in the mid-'80s, 82 to 85. That's when Bill and Hillary Clinton were there, and when they were running this big op over there, Congress had passed the Boland Amendment in 84, forbidding U.S. involvement in the Civil War down in Nicaragua, where the Sandinistas, the communist-backed Daniel Ortega, was against the Contras who we were supporting. And Reagan ordered CIA director to conduct ops to arm them. And so there's three multiply nested covert domestic ops at that time. Centaur Rose, Jade Bridge, and Screw Worm were the code names. I was involved in the Centaur Rose. Jade Bridge was an op where they brought Nicaraguan pilots up and trained them on small single-engine aircraft around the Occidental National Forest and stuff out there in Arkansas. Remember, I was right across the border in Tulsa at this time. And we had a number of safe houses there. We had guys in the National Guard Armory there in Little Rock who would pilfer out the ordnance. And back then, they didn't have computers to keep records of all the stuff. It's done by ledgers and hand stuff, so it's real easy to get the stuff out of the armory. And we had a safe house farm south of there where we'd cool it off, and then we'd transport it back over to the safe houses between Oklahoma City and Tulsa. And then when the orders were given, we'd bring them back over, and they were flown in Barry Seals 123C, called it the Fat Lady, military plane down into Central America. Then they bring the drugs back and all that. But anyway, when you go through this op, all this stuff was going on, and so Bill Clinton and them are running front. My higher-ups told me that the CIA was moving $100 million in cocaine every month, and that Clinton was getting 10% of that black ops money, as what he used to run for president, about $10 million a month. And as part of his cover, he appointed the state medical examiner so that when they cleaned Centaur Rose up afterwards, and they had to murder out the witnesses, because that's standard procedures to get rid of the low-level ground guys and, they have accidents or whatever, and then the agents and case officers always pick up and go somewhere else. And Clinton was washing the money through the Rose Law Firm with the Whitewater thing. And you recall the Whitewater investigation began later on in July 26th of 1994. That's when Congress started that. And so Ken Starr was appointed as independent counsel later in August of 94. That's just before the Murrah Building went up. And so they were going to subpoena all these records. There had been a massive outbreak of domestic law enforcement. ABI, Arkansas Bureau of Investigation, IRS, they were looking in at all this stuff. They were washing all this money through the banks in Little Rock, Jim McDougal, Susan McDougal. Yes.
That's why he had to die of a heart attack in jail.
Yeah, he was later suicided just before he was going to testify against the Clintons and through the grand jury, the whole thing. And they shut him up, and then they washed the money through the Worthington Bank in Atlanta, and from there to the BCCI Bank in the Caymans. That's the Bank of Commerce Credit International. So there's a massive money laundering and drug thing going on.
You know, your volume is totally dropping out about every 6 or 7 minutes for about 5 to 8 seconds, and it's been consistent. It's a pattern, and I just want people to know it's not us. Our equipment's working just fine. We're being messed with, but it's not taking away from the overall message. I'd like to interject a question at this point as we continue. And this may be an irrelevant question from your point of view, and I understand if it is. But I used to have someone give me info, and she'd come on my show, and this is here before I was on Global Star. and her name was Diane Hunter, not her real name. And she led me to someone, a discovery of the work of Peter Kawaja. And I may be saying the name incorrectly. This has been years, but I'm in the ballpark. And this man had firsthand knowledge of everything you're talking about with regard to documents in the Oklahoma City mural building. And he had released some dead man switches around the country. And Diana was leading me down the path of discovery. And I was linking some of this back to the Oklahoma City bombing on air. We were doing this on air. And I want to say the year was probably about 2009, 2010. Joyce Riley, the late Joyce Riley, was on the periphery of this because she had talked about some of these things and we intersected on some of the topics. But here's what's interesting. I want to bring this up full cycle now. About a year after Diana and I were going down this path, some lady contacted me and says, I've been following your work with Peter Kawaja and all these revelations about Oklahoma City bombing being tied to Gulf War syndrome. And she said, would you like to talk to Peter Kawaja? Because no one knew what happened to him. He just vanished. And I said, sure. So we arranged to have a phone conversation, and it was the most bizarre conversation I ever had. And I'm telling you, it was not Peter Kawaja. He couldn't answer questions that someone of his background, supposedly what he had done, I knew more than he knew, and it was supposed to be the other way around. Do you know anything about this parallel? By the way, he was a doctor who worked in various VAs, and this is where he got some of his information from. That was his MO background. Do you know anything about the Peter Kawaja situation and tied into this?
No, I don't. I don't know about that. But what I do know about is Centaur Rose down there. I was in those ops, and I was a low-level runner. I mean, I can go into how we did all the stuff and how we moved everything, but anyway, the point is that those records of all the law enforcement stuff had been moved to the Murrah building. And, Craig Roberts got a call, Tulsa Police Detective, he got a call from one of the FBI guys over in the Little Rock, Field Division and told him that the records had been moved over there prior to the explosion. And so what this did was this got Bill and Hillary Clinton out from under not only the Whitewater investigations, but the future impeachment. As you recall, Dave, from January 7th to February 12th of 1999, that's when Clinton's impeachment began. And so that's January 7th to February 12th. They arrested me on October 7th of 1999, okay, just a few months before Clinton's impeachment. The CIA... the agent, he said, I flew out straight from D.C. to talk to you tonight. You've got quite a record, you know. And I said, well, with all due respect to your fine work and the ATF's field work, there's no way you could get the records on me because you don't have the security clearance. And then they asked me direct questions about Bill Clinton because I know all this stuff. That's why this phone right now, I have kept this phone right to my mouth. I'm on a hard line here in my house in Colorado. I've not moved the phone away. I'm not on a radio phone. I'm talking to you straight to the phone. I've had it the same way the whole time. So what's going on is they're dropping this out, and because they don't want this information out. They planted me with evidence. They faked the evidence, lied to the grand jury, and threw me in Supermax. They took away my mattress. They took away all my clothes. I was in a concrete cell. They're like bank vaults. And I had no shirt, no shoes. All I had was a pair of skivvies. And I quit eating the food in there because I thought the CIA was going to poison me. And finally, when I got weak, I had to eat. But when they took McVeigh out to execute him, they came back down to my cell right after that, and they threw down the chains, and they had a bunch of guards with tasers, and they took me out and chained me all up. And one of the lieutenants looked right at me, and he said, do you know where you're going, Snodgrass? And I said, no, I don't know, and I don't give a, you know, a cuss word. So I said that, and then they all started laughing. He goes, you're going to Terre Haute, because McVeigh had just been sent there to be executed. And they were messing with me. They left my lights off for days at a time. I stayed in there days in terms of weeks and weeks to months. And I was getting in really bad physical condition. And I thought they were going to kill me in there. And so they are dropping this phone out. They don't want this information out. And I'm going to get it out. And they can do whatever they want to because this is a spiritual war now between the forces of light and the time that we all stood up together as Americans. We've been getting email from colonels in the Air Force, captains in the Marine Corps, and people. They've all seen dirty things, Dave, you know, and a lot of them had to keep their mouth shut, you know, because they signed national security oath. I didn't sign one. I'm an independent contractor. They can't control me. The only way they can control me, Dave, is to plant me with evidence, which they've already done, or kill me. And so my job is to step forward now, get this truth out. This is the real deal. This is the stuff they don't want out. And so anything you want to know, just ask me.
Well, to go back, and I know you don't know about Peter Khawaja, but what's interesting is what I learned in our research investigation that followed his work, and it's all been scrubbed from the Internet. I mean, every bit. People say you can't make things disappear from the Internet. Well, I know that's not true. And let me tell you what we also found. We found that the Rose Law Firm was involved in this. The Clintons were involved in this. They had pre-knowledge of the Oklahoma City bombing, and I'm talking Bill and Hillary both. Are you aware of that?
My personal opinion, I'm not aware operationally. I did not have any actionable intelligence on that. But my own personal opinion is that Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton were directly involved in the orders to set up the operations, just like Reagan did, you know, when the Bowman Amendment was passed for the Contras and the Nicaraguans. The Clintons are directly involved in this. I believe that they're directly involved in the murder of American citizens. I believe that they are satanic, evil, and that they are guilty of treason against the United States of America.
Yeah, you just had the cut out there. That one was about 3 or 4 seconds. But I got the gist of what you said very easily. Isn't it interesting that although you have no knowledge of the Peter Khawaja deal, I walked a parallel path with this. Now, much later than you did, of course, and I was studying history while you were living current events. But nonetheless, the information is right there. And by the way, you mentioned BCCI Bank. They were involved in funding this operation, too, through their operatives. At least that's what we learned. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I think what's fixing to happen here is this phone, it's going to go dead. And if it does, just call me right back. So if that happens, that's part of their program. So just to have the producer call me right back on the landline and see if we can get through. And please, sir, repeat that question again.
Okay. All right.
I'm sorry.
What I learned, that's okay. When I went down the parallel path, you know, in that historically, you were living at current events, is what I said. But what we discovered, what Diana Hunter and I discovered, is BCCI Bank was funding this operation, at least in part, to blow up the Murrow Federal Building through their covert operatives in the CIA. That's the information we got. Do you know anything about that?
No, I do not. I know that Harold Leonard had that money there, and I don't know where he got it from. It could have very well been from the BCCI Bank, or the money they paid McVeigh with. That could have come from it. But see, someone had to fund that. And the black operators that placed those three charges inside the Murrow Building, they were structural charges designed to, you know, take the whole building down. And two of them didn't go off, but there were witnesses that saw that, you know, I think they were dressed up as phone guys, and they're pre-wiring the building. But the funding had to come from that because it's not cheap. They had to have millions of dollars to pull that off. And someone asked me why, Cody, did they move the records out of the FBI Little Rock field office about the Clintons? Why did they move all that over to the Murrow Building? Why didn't they just take them out of the FBI office and destroy them there? And the answer is that there's a major custody chain. You can't just go in an FBI office and take records out and do what you want with them. People have to sign for them. Copies have to be made. Judges have to give orders so that those records can be accessed. And so why not just send them over there in a transfer, and then magically the building blows up, see? And then they're out clean. They don't have to cover up another investigation as to why the records were taken out in the first place. They were just transferred. Now, the question is, Dave, who ordered that? And Bill Clinton was president. I don't have any proof of it, but I strongly believe that he ordered those records to be moved over. He was the one that stood to gain from the destruction of those records. he was the one that knew what they were actually doing in Arkansas. And Hillary Clinton and them were washing money up here in Denver through the HUD. And the HUD stuff, they were buying condominiums and giving them away. And turns out Judge Edward Nottingham, the guy appointed, I mean nominated by George Bush Sr., DCI, his wife, Jagger, she lived in one of those condominiums. It went through Milbon Associates up here. There was investment companies through HUD and then various private investors where they washed the money. And she ended up living in one of these. And what I failed to mention is that after my case was over up here, Judge Nottingham himself, in 2007, he was a top federal judge here, and then he had to resign on a sex scandal with prostitutes. And I have all the Nine News and all the stuff in the book where he was with a place called the Denver Players owner. She was Brenda Stewart, running a prostitute ring. And Nottingham had to he was spending $3,000 a night at strip clubs getting drunk, and they caught him on all kinds of things. But, you know, there's a parallel justice system, and the guys on the top, like the Clintons and the judges, they get let loose, and the rest of us have to pay tickets for seatbelts, you know. So, yeah, the whole thing stinks from top to bottom. The Rose Law Firm, they were washing money through HUD, through Milbon Associates up here in Denver. Some of the federal judges that were here, like Richard Mate, who was the one who tried McVeigh, the whole Tenth Circuit up here is a festoon of corruption. It's highly corrupt, which is why his trial was held here. They could control it. They could control the narrative. They could control any blowback of a potential talk about a false flag op or anything. And so the BCCI Bank could have very well been the principal funding for this black op at the Murrah Building, because the Clinton stuff was being washed from Arkansas through the Worthington Bank in Atlanta to BCCI Bank. And once it's washed and sanitized at that bank, and it also went through the office in Haiti. There's a big CIA station in Haiti. A lot of people don't know that. They're washing all kinds of dope money through there. And guess what, Dave? In the book, I have a deal about John Kerry. He was a senator on the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, and he was the one leading the investigation into the BCCI Bank. And they shut the bank down after Centaur Rose was depositing all that money in it. And then they confiscated all the bank records. And the SEC, it all vanished in a black hole.
My head is spinning. And
I've got all this documented in the book. It's highly researched. It took me 4 years to write it.
I've gone down so many dead ends connected to this topic. Not just the Oklahoma City bombing, but all the affiliated events, too. And a lot of it going back to the Clintons. But a lot of it dead-ended, and you're kind of extending that road right now. And when you talked about the Rose Law Firm involvement in this and Hillary Clinton's involvement in it, if we jump forward, I forget the year now without my documentation, but she was part of a group called Lafarge. And they were involved in very similar things, funding chemical weapon sales, and they also paid the first money from a corporation to ISIS. And that's well documented. I mean, it's something I wrote about last year. I mean, it's the same exact pattern.
Only
20 years later.
Yeah, she sat on the board at Walmart with Sam Walton, and you know Walmart's in the FEMA camp thing now. See, this picture gets bigger and deeper. I was asked if I wanted to meet Bill Clinton a couple of times. I said no. We were wearing black ski masks and plastic gloves most of the time, doing the dirty work out in the dark and the rain, and I never wanted to get around any kind of politicians. There's always photographers and stuff, security around there. And one of my associates, I'm not going to say his name, he's still alive. They had a deep-sea fishing company over in New Zealand as a front. And so the Don Tyson, that owns all the Tyson food trucks and stuff, they would go over there, and their employees would get, fishing trips and so forth. And he came back to the States in Arkansas, and he met Bill Clinton and them, and he told me all this stuff, right out of his mouth, the things he saw. and they were washing, they were moving all that cocaine they brought back up through the Tyson food trucks. That was one avenue. They put them in the refrigeration trucks after they unload them at the main airport there, and then they'd run them all over to regional distribution hubs like Dallas, Kansas City, St. Louis, so forth. And at that time, Dave, down in the 80s, they were, you know, that was all the cocaine cowboy stuff going on down in Miami and all through there. That's when Janet Reno was head of Dade County. She was the DA. My friend Captain Glenn Wilson from Vietnam, he was the head of No-Knock Narcotics down there. And he had coffee with her in the mornings. And he eyewitnessed her. They'd bring in the dope in from the bus at night, and she would take cocaine and heroin out of there for her lesbian friends. That's what he told me. And then she also, on politically sensitive case or politically connected people, they would lose the evidence, make sure it never went to trial. And he told me how corrupt she was. And so all that was going on. My girlfriend was down in Miami around that time, and she was working for the cartels. And she had dinner with Pablo Escobar one time. We know a whole lot about all of it. I mean, we're barely scratching the surface, and I don't want to jump around too much. But
We are. But I'm going to jump around for a minute, because okay. I don't have you that much longer, and you're filling in so many gaps for me right now. But one, you mentioned Pablo Escobar. I'd like to go a little farther south. Are you familiar with the Sanchez Paredes group that's in Peru? It's basically the Peruvian army, and they're the supposed link between terrorism and MS-13 and Central America and those kind of groups. Are you familiar with that at all?
Have you ever heard of Operation Snowmass?
Yes, I have, from a DEA agent.
Okay. Well, I'm. Yeah. Yes. Yes, sir. I was down in Lima, Peru, down there, and there was a lot of stuff going on. We had some jobs over in Ho Chi Minh City, which is old Saigon, and some people were cleaning up the ordnance after the wars, and some of that stuff was moved to Fort Bragg, and then from down there to around Lima, and then over through Shining Path, some of the terrorist groups back into the Middle East. So there's a bunch of armed stuff going on.
But, and how about outside San Salvador, where they train paramilitary forces facilitated by the group I just mentioned, and they make their way north? You know about this?
Yeah, I didn't operate much in El Salvador. I had a job offer down in Nicaragua during the Contra Sandinista thing to train the Contras in hand-to-hand combat, because I had extensive martial arts training and all, and at the time I couldn't go down there. The money was not right, and I was busy up in Arkansas with all that stuff. So it all ties together. I mean, there's tie after tie after tie, because the international drug and arms stuff, you know, they had all the triad, China White and all the heroin over there, Air America, General Secord, and Shackley, the CIA guys. They all went to Costa Rica after the war and got thrown out of there. And then it all ties in with the opium production over in Afghanistan now. It's all just a worldwide web of fingers that go through the gangs, through the mafia, through all the intelligence agencies, not just CIA, the Russian KGB. They're all got their little fingers in it, and they all interface back and forth. Someone asked me, what about black ops? How many are there? There's no way to know, because a lot of them are like me. They're assets. We're not listed on any sheet. We were not in the military. We were not working for the CIA directly. We took jobs, and we took jobs that were black jobs and then black-on-black jobs. When a black op went sideways somewhere and they needed some contractors or somebody with no ties to go clean it up, they called us. And so there was this picture gets deeper and bigger and deeper. The more you look at it and you pull a layer of the onion off, then there's another layer. And then you pull it off and you go, oh my God, there's another layer. And you pull it off and it's, oh my God. And then pretty soon you have an event like the Murrah Building or 9/11 Towers. And a supposed jet that hit the Pentagon, you know, and they made that hole there, and all the records are there. See, there's records, destruction of records on these patterns.
Um, What about the Clinton Foundation? How does that factor into this after the fact?
Well, is the Clinton Foundation...
Let me ask you this question, Cody. Is it an outgrowth of the very things you were talking about here?
Absolutely. They did the same thing in Arkansas. You know, Larry Nichols has done a lot of things, and he's talked about the Clintons washing money and all the stuff. There was a Clinton Chronicles tape that was made that had a lot of the guys on there talking about how they were washing money through ADFA. That's the Arkansas Development and Finance. And so when you fast forward in time, they start up this foundation, and that was just to use political leverage to get money on the bet, you know, betting on the come that Hillary was going to be president. And so everyone's piling money in there. And you must know about the guy named Dr. Dean Lorich, who was just found up New York with a stab.
Yeah.
And he's found by his 11-year-old daughter, supposedly suicide. Well, he was about to testify about the stuff in Haiti. And the Clinton Foundation had about $30 million down there that was earmarked for relief for the children. Of course, it never got to the children because the whole thing is that whole Clinton Foundation is just another way to wash black ops money. Just like in Centaur Rose down there. The Clintons are, in my opinion, I have a little, not a chapter, but a section in the book about them. And in my opinion, Bill and Hillary Clinton are the worst criminal team, man and wife team, ever in the history of the United States. You know, some people say Bonnie and Clyde, you know, and all that, but the Clintons far surpass them. They are looters. They are satanic evil. I've heard that Hillary Clinton is a fourth-degree coven witch. I do not have any actual intelligence, you know, to prove that. That's just what I heard from some people. And several of the people I know have had direct contact with them. For instance, one of my girlfriends here in Colorado, the people she works for are very wealthy. They were the Democratic chairs of one of the counties here. And during the presidential campaign, they had... you know, direct contact with Ms. Clinton. And so all of this, you know, and after, of course, Dave, you know, the presidential race was over and she lost to Trump, then all of a sudden the Clinton Foundation disappears. It's supposedly set up to help the children. Why aren't they helping them now? The whole thing was a wash money. The whole thing's another lie. And then they're murdering people like Dr. Dean Lorch to shut him up. The Clintons are nothing but Murder Incorporated and Black Ops Washing Money Incorporated. They are pure satanic evil. And I say that over the air. That's my own opinion. I have the First Amendment right guaranteed to me in the Constitution of the United States to state what I believe. And I was involved down there in Arkansas. I've seen this stuff over and over. I believe they're directly involved in the Murder City bombing and the cover-up.
You know, I had some contact with Larry Nichols dating back a few months ago, and it was sporadic, but it was informative. And now he's just gone totally black. All his social media is gone. Everyone who I know had contact with him is not speaking with him now. Do you know anything about what's going on with that?
Last I heard was that he had throat cancer or something. He's had a number of trips to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I've got his address here in Conway, Arkansas. I have not heard any actionable intelligence from you know, any of the operators or people that are still alive. Most of the guys that we worked with, of course, are all dead or gone or very sick with Agent Orange or whatever. And so I haven't heard anything about him except that he was sick and had cancer. And, you know, they might have snuck in his refrigerator while he was gone one day. They can put his house under surveillance and then wait till he's gone and a black ops team go in there and put a little, some type of poison in his, you know, they can put some thorium or cesium-135 or some powdered plutonium or something in one of his drinks or something, very small, minute, and then you get throat cancer. You know, I don't know. All I know is, that these Clintons have to be dealt with, and we have to remove them out of our society. If the government of the United States has been corrupted, because Clinton appointed a lot of the judges and Hillary and the State Department, Dave, you ought to hear the stuff about Benghazi. I had people directly there that told talked to me right in my ear and told me what exactly happened that night in Benghazi. It's an amazing story. It deals with stolen gold from Gaddafi. I had another associate had dinner with Gaddafi over there at the presidential palace. And this is straight from the horse's mouth what really happened. The American civilians never hear this stuff. So anyway, Larry Nichols could have been poisoned or he could have had cancer, you know, naturally. But he has went, you know, kind of like disappeared. I don't know.
Well, this is we got about a minute left, and I wish we had about 3 hours left. This has been incredible.
Well, I just like to say, Dave, that to all the people out there, that we are in the spiritual fight of our lives now for our country. You know, my stepdad was at Pearl Harbor and Guadalcanal. You know, my uncle fought in the Battle of the Bulge over there against the evil of Adolf Hitler. And that same evil has reared its ugly head here in the shadow government of our country. And if we don't do something and we don't stand up to this, we may just well lose our whole country and our Constitution and all the freedoms that all the good brothers and sisters in the Marine Corps and the Air Force and the Navy and the Army that have suffered so much. We're going to lose it all to the shadow government cabal. And that's why I'm coming forward. This is a lot bigger than me, Dave. This is a lot bigger than my little story about the Oklahoma City bombing that happened 20-something years ago. This is about our country. We are all Americans. We are all Americans. And the light of our soul, the light of our nation's soul is at stake here. And that's why I'm risking what I'm risking to do this. It's not for money, for a book. It's for our country. It's for our children's future.
Let me interrupt you because we're gonna run out of time, and I do want people to be able to get a copy of your book. How do they do that?
Right now, just go to my email. It's CodyGoldenElk@yahoo.com.
All right. When I post this show, probably will be in the chain probably tomorrow night. I'll make sure I put that in there. I'll go back and pull this out.
Yeah, we're working on a PDF website, but what's going to happen, Dave, when we set the PayPal up, they're going to hack it and shut it down just like they did Jim Mars's book. Remember that book he wrote about Sandy Hook?
Yep, I sure do.
Yep, and the PayPal shut it all down, so you ended up giving them for free. That's going to happen here. As soon as we get it set up, they'll shut it down, yeah.
We are out of time, my friend. We're going to do this again after the first of the year. Thanks so much for joining us, Cody. You're a great American. I really respect you for your courage and integrity. Everybody else, we'll be back at hour number 3 with Bob Griswold. Don't touch that dial.